God cannot be known by the outgoing faculties, cannot be known by the intellect, cannot be known by the vital layers of the pranas. It can be known only by the soul, like alone can know the like. When it is liberated, when it is analyzed from mind and outgoing faculties, this is practically, now intellectually, that appeals to you, but how to do it? Whatever methods we are having now, reading our scriptures, saying prayers, performing certain rites and rituals, they all relate to the outgoing faculty. And this is something to start when you rise above all to outgoing faculties. Even with the mind, intellect too, you cannot, unless you are intellectually still. As a matter of inference, you might draw inference to come to some conclusion. But still the mind is working, intellect is working. We must be intellectually still too. Then a sort of transport arises to the soul and it is unbound. This is all we have to do. So when a master, someone comes to the master, what does he do? He first, all these 10 servants of the outgoing faculties, 5, audition, sight, smell, taste and touch, working to the sense organs of the ears, eyes, nose, tongue and skin. These are to be controlled. If these are controlled, then how should we set in order? Or every servant to do his job. Or as you clean the room, you set ears in order, you light the candles, everything all right. So this is the first thing to be done. Those who are attached are given up to the outside enjoyments, pleasures, maybe good, excuse me, or bad. Both cannot rise above but good. That is why Lord Krishna said, good actions and bad actions, both are binding, like the gold chains or the iron chains. So this is practical, first thing, what we have at the feet of the Master. He gives you how to withdraw from outside for a while, how to rise above body consciousness for a while. One day cannot become an MA, Rome was not built in a day. But once you get something by regular practice, by obeying his orders, naturally you become an adept. The man who is reading in the MA class today, sometimes he is reading in the primary. If those who are reading in the primary, they are given the same help and guidance, well, they can reach the MA class. That is why it says, every saint has his past, and every sinner a future. Man can change. Even the decades, you see, can become saints. Valmiki was a Dacoite, I tell you. He became Saint Valmiki. He just related the story of Ramayana 18,000 years before it actually happened. So my point is, there is hope for everybody. There is nothing to be disheartened. Only we have to, what experience is given, we have to develop it without intervention of outgoing faculties and intellect. It does not mean you should not use your intellect. Understand. When you understand, this is then do. Let mind not meddle into it. Because if your mind is just clutching, seeing, here, there, drawing inference, the intellect is working. And until you are intellectually still, you cannot take a step further. So this is the first thing we have to do. For that, you are advised to keep a diary for self-introspection. You now realize the necessity. But how many are you who are keeping diaries, maintaining diary daily? Huh? I am afraid it may not be 10%. That is why even if we do get something, we do not plow this wonderfully. We must. So this is first thing we learn at the feet of the master. What is the difference between a master and an average man? He is a man all the same, and a doctor is a man all the same, like us. But he is known by anatomy, how the system works, how the diseases arise, how can that be cured. Similarly, this is a disease we are suffering. Those who are just, adept, competent, going himself beyond these bounds, as others who raise them up, well, such a man is called a Mahatma. The God in him. You know, who can give you contact with God? No son of man can do it. It is God absolute when it came into expression. You see? When he came down, then he gave the some teachings of the higher because he had seen it. The lower it comes, he knows almost all the way. In the man body, although in the man body, he is conscious of that. That's the difference between a man and average man and a master. So he says, when you come to such master, this is the first thing to be done. And we lack here, I tell you of it. We are given some experience, but we don't live up to it. Dragged away by the outside prayers, knowing that God is within us, the priceless jewel, priceless pearl, but we cannot leave off this dross of the outside. Tagore, poet of the international flame, says, O God, I see there is a great wealth in you, but I cannot throw away the filth or the dross of this body. Knowing fully well, we do realize intellectually. And all masters who say, what do they say? They say, God first and world next. And what do we say? We say, world first and God may come after. Truly speaking, we are not after God, we are after world. We pray God. Why? Most of us, we want worldly things. Had that not been the competency with God, nobody would have thought of God too, you see. A weaker man prays before some stronger person. So whatever goes out from the heart of our hearts, he hears, he is there already. He is watching our every action. Ask and it shall be given unto you. This is what all masters said. So this is the first thing, I'm laying much stress on that very point. I've been requesting, directing, I've been begging of you people through my circulars and verbal talks too. And still if you do not do it, we should. So that's the first thing here. What will happen? Now you have eyes. You see? When you wish you miss, with your open eyes, you have so much control over your sight, while open eyes you do not see. This we can develop, you see. Newton was sitting by a roadside, solving certain mathematical problems. He was so much absorbed in these problems that the band passed by him while playing. He did not hear. Why? Until this attention, which is the outcome of our souls, or with the outgoing faculties, these outgoing faculties do not work. Somebody passed by asking, well, Newton, has any band passed by this way? Today? No, I don't know. You might have got experience in your own lives. When you are sitting very much absorbed in some thought, somebody calls you, you do not hear. Somebody comes, sits by you, and you are absorbed. You don't feel who has come and who is gone. So this is the training of the attention, what is called the Sukh Yoga, you see. So when that is set, you see, you might be sitting and hundreds of people will still be all alone. This is what Emerson says. When he wanted all loneliness, he went to an inn, you see, where hundreds come and hundreds go. Because there is no concern with anybody, he is absorbed in his own thoughts. So if you think that you should leave the world and go to the outside world in the wilderness, there also you have got, you see, animals and trees and everything, your attention will be drawn outside. The only thing required is to control our outgoing faculties. And how to do it? That you can learn from those who have done it and follow the instruction. So naturally, when everything is set, you might have experienced in your life too, when you are cut off from every outside, you feel a sort of rest and peace. At times, not every day, but at times it does. When you are cut off, quite absorbed from everything, you feel a sense of pleasure, rest, bliss, peace. Naturally what happens? We are after having that peace prolonged. Naturally, you see, we are children of light, as I told you, like a candle's flame. Its source is up. All it wants to go, even you turn its face downward, even then it will go down. Our soul is of God, you see, of light. It is bound by these outgoing faculties and the body. When it is liberated, it will go up. It is but natural. Then naturally, the true rest comes. How? We withdraw our attention from outside. We enter this laboratory of the man body, you see. Just from the burning rays of the sun, when you enter some room, hot, very hot outside, when you enter the air-conditioned room, how rest you feel? It is something like that. You feel it at rest. Some glimpses, when Master comes, only not he shows you how to withdraw from outside and enter this laboratory of the man body. But he also shows you how to rise above senses and have some experience. When there is no questioning of mind, when intellect is at rest, naturally that truth becomes refulgent. You see light. If you are questioning why this is, why that is not, why that has not come, then mind is not still, you see. That has to be still. So what he feels, you see, at that time, the experience of God in the form of light and sound. This is first thing. As you rise, the Master gives you an experience first to how to rise above this iron curtain of the man body. So, then as you day-to-day practice, you rise above the astral body, the causal body, the super-causal body. You day-to-day more bliss, more jaya, everything like that. Saint Tulsidas, he says when he rose above this body consciousness, reached the causal plane, he had experience of bliss and jaya, he thought, oh, well, that's the most and the highest of all. And he says when he transcended the causal plane into the super-causal and beyond, he thought perhaps this causal plane was only a washing room as compared with to that. Those who have tasted that bliss, they are here in the world, but they are bound, you see. Masters are going under the order of God, you see. They want to go back. Once also any of us, when have got some experience like that, we wish to go in there. Now why we don't want to go in there? Because we find joy and bliss and happiness in the outside things. And moreover, we have never cared to analyze, to go into the matter, what it is that gives us bliss in the outside things. We are conscious beings. How a conscious being can have I mean bliss or joy or happiness in material things. But do feel how, why we are bliss personified. God is all bliss, all happiness, all joy. And we are also innate, this bliss is also innate in us. So long as we are identified with something, for the time being we reflect our own happiness in those things. When that thing is withdrawn from us, or we are made to withdraw from them, we feel unhappiness. So we should identify ourselves with something which is not changing. And that is God alone. The outside thing, whatever happiness we feel, they're really not lying in those things, but in our own self that is reflected there, so long as we are identified with them. So such a soul cries, oh, how beautiful you are, you say. How beautiful, how, what you say, all wisdom. He sees his wisdom in all things, because he becomes a conscious co-worker of the divine plan. He sees it as he is doing, not I. So naturally the question arises from a new man, well, how did you get it to this stage? You say it is all beautiful, it is all glory. All outside inside is all his expression, God is light, God is everywhere. He is all wisdom, this and that thing. By how did you attain to this state? What did he do? That's a natural question that would be asked. So for that, we are all, I think, seeking that thing. First thing is, be truthful. Be truthful. If you don't tell lies, you change. Deeds of darkness are committed in the dark. You go and want to do it somewhere where nobody sees you. So anything that requires secrecy, that is a sin. Two seekers after God went to a master. The master told him, look here, here are two pigeons. Take them away and kill them someplace where nobody sees you. One was very active, he went round under the shade of wall where nobody was seeing, he killed it, came back in 2 minutes. The other poor fellow, wherever he went, he did not find anyone, any place where nobody did see. From morn till night, he was going round and round, and returned in the evening unsuccessful. Master asked him, what? Haven't you been able to kill this? No, sir. Why? Could you find any place? No, sir. And who was seeing you? Then the very pigeon was seeing me. You follow the beauty of the sayings, I tell you, you see. Live up to them. Each of one, you must be an ambassador, I tell you. The man who has got the man body, he has the birthright to become God, I tell you. There is no exaggeration about it. But pity it is, we don't follow. For that very purpose, you will find you have been given diaries to maintain. What are they for? Be truthful in mind, word, and deed. Don't make false promises. Don't think otherwise, say otherwise. Let your heart, brain and mouth agree. What is the criterion of a truth? Truthful saying. That all these three, your tongue, what you speak, your intellect, your mind, agree what you got in your heart. Can you do any evil thing? Mind that anything when you do, you are later on asked, well, what you are doing, and nothing, sir. They're telling lies. When you tell one lie, you have to say other hundreds of lies to cover that lie. How we create for our own self more thorns, you see. With a truthful man, ask many times. You the same thing. You are not to think what you have to say. And a man who tell lies, you think, well, I have told to this man this thing, that man another thing, is all you are trying to reconcile. But that must be out of the bag. You see? Even one thing, if you be truthful, you can change. You see? So naturally we want truthfulness, first of all. Not that anybody sees, you see. The God in you sees it. The master power within you sees it. So why I tell you, mind, be true to your own self. You are true to your own self, you are true to your God, to your master. If you are true to your own self, you have to fear none in the world, in the three worlds. This is the first thing required. And further, when some God in man, now I say, where he is manifest, he puts you on the way, gives a contact with you, that God power is the true master, not the son of man, mind that, that resides within you. Can you do any evil or bad thing? Even when a child of 5 years is sitting before you, you require secrecy. Our master used to say, you see, when a child of 5 years is sitting by you, you want secrecy. You are going to do some new thing, you try to avoid. When that very God power is within you, watching your every action, you see, how can you do any evil? So fear of that. Once it so happened in my life, you see, generally these controversies do come up. You see? And there was great propaganda against me. Once master asked me to initiate 250 people in the monthly gathering, you see. And then naturally competition arises and there was great propaganda against me. I kept quiet. Because I was true to my own self. I knew God is within me, Master is within me. And it was so arranged that I could not talk to the Master for 6 months. So much influential people came up to that. So once my brother, you see, elder brother was there, I told him, if you go to the Master, he was also initiated. Just by the way, asked me if I any sin I might have committed. But his eyes were giving me support, you see. Well, he asked him, he said, he had not done anything, even knowingly or unknowingly. But strange enough, so much has passed over his head, he had never come to me to say that this propaganda is not right, which is being carried on. I never asked any question of my master, except two or three in the beginning. So I naturally, after requesting, I want a few minutes. Oh, yes, yes, you are welcome. So at night when everybody was away, he said, locked the door, I sat by him, and I told him, Master, I did not come to you. Because I knew you were in me, and you are watching my every action. And the further trend, you also watched. That is why I did not come. All the tables were turned. So be truthful, I tell you. This is a very great qualification. We people don't care. We sell the prophet Joseph for the sake of little petty monies. You gamble your, what you say, eternal life with few mundane things. We too so. Have fear, he's seeing, he's watching. These two qualifications, you see. And the third thing is, he gives you contact with the world power, you see. How to rise and how to come in contact with the normal world power, the light and sound, which will be regular, day to day. This is the bread of life. Don't miss it. And what will happen? You will have progress day to day, inner peace, inner jaya. Whatever outward prayers or performance or rites and rituals will become blessed. Yes. When you say prayer, you will find me in front of you. When you read scriptures, always is vivid to you. You see? Such liking you will find. Naturally, you will have all peace. Your soul, which is down from there, coming in contact with the, you see, the God power, which is light and sound principle. The more the our consciousness comes in the all contact with the all consciousness, it overflows with joy and peace. All wisdom. God is all wisdom. And masters, you see, never speak at the level of it, like they speak as it comes. And Emerson says, the thoughts which come without thinking, they are always perfect. And what does he do? He loves all. Even the sinners and the others. For sinners, he has got more pity and more love. Because he considers he is the child of God. His work is to bring together all children of God together. Now, this is the preparation what you do that thing. But one thing more, he says how you became beloved of God, how the God became beloved of you. You became the beloved of God. How did you, when, take the example of a girl, she has been married, she is devoted to her husband, mind and soul. True. She lives according to what he wishes. Result what it is? She loves her husband and her, so husband begins to love her. Whatever she wants or needs, or he sees that he wants it, he gives him, provides him, without asking for it. The lover, I mean the wife, becomes the lover of her husband, and husband becomes the lover of his wife. This is worldly way, you see. Masters, when they give teaching, they give both ways. So those who love God come in contact with him. Naturally, those who go at beck and call, constant, do not do anything of their own free will, which is earthly. Well, he becomes enamored of that. The master, he loves God, and God loves master. But master are no other than God in them, you see. That's the only comparative, I mean, a relative statement to show. So the question arises, how you become the beloved of God? Well, naturally, can by obeying, just like any female, any girl will do. You see, girl, when she is betrothed, engaged with some real, truly engaged at heart, all the while she thinks of him, is it not? And that reaction in the heart of the others, that is abiding in him, and he abides in him. So that way, that dwells receptivity, you see. And that makes what, you see? The other man does what he does. You see? There's a story in India, you see. There was one student who was called Ghanimat by name. Master fell in love with the student so by so. He could not write calligraphy, good handwriting. He simply scribbled. And the master came so much enamored of him that he began to copy that scribbling. This is the feat of love, I tell you. Love is grace, has great power. One saint prays, O God, we have been liberated from the world, all entanglements and bindings. Now you take care of your own self, you are bound more than me.
Good morning. Welcome to the satsang of Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was second 30 minutes of the talk titled The Birthright to be God. It was given by Master on 19th January 1964 in Washington, D.C. Our reader this morning is David Halliburton. Hello, David.
Hi, Pradeep. Good morning, and good morning, everyone. This morning, I'm going to finish reading something that I started for Wednesday evening's telephone satsang, and it is a writing by Master Kripal in the 1950s called Sant, the Master. It was published in the October 1970 Satsang Desh and as Chapter 5 in the Way of the Saints. So I'm picking up toward the end. As a matter of fact, no one can know or find a true master unless and until the master is pleased to reveal his own identity himself to the innermost satisfaction of one desiring to confirm his faith in the master. This is done according to the extent of one's receptivity and to the degree that his capacity to understand and his love entitle him. It depends wholly on the kindness and sweet mercy of God through a master. Some are given clues according to their desires. The faith of some in their master is confirmed when a disciple is saved miraculously from some danger. A favorable response to the prayers made to the master confirms faith in others. There are others who have book knowledge and are satisfied by the examples of others, so they get confirmation that way. Masters have the knowledge of measuring the capacity and range of everyone's intellect and bestow faith accordingly. Sants know the merits and evils of everyone, but they never disclose them. Divine grace is never slow. A good mother says not, "Will you?" but gives. From among the aspirants, they are given the lion's share of divine faith in the master, who come with downcast heads, heavy hearts, and the shuddering anguish of a lost soul, speechless with anxieties, to unburden their worries. Meekness is no weakness. It is a strong, cemented road of humility, which leads to the benign reality. Experience is the only criterion. If a master is able to give us experience, we can accept him as one who knows the divine science, one who is connected and can give us contact. If one is in the first or second grade and someone else sits by him for a whole lifetime, he will never attain a high degree of education. Man hesitates and fears to approach a master saint because his living is tarnished, maybe less in one and more in another. Never fear to go to a master saint because you are a sinner. He is meant more for sinners than for others. He has a remedy for every wound. Approach him, and through him will be found a way to become rid of sin. If one is far away, he can be contacted through correspondence. He has means and methods to meet every case. He is competent. It will be easy now to realize that paravidya has a scientific basis, though it differs a bit from the ordinary system. It is not a scholastic system of philosophy based on intellectual cleverness. Much less is it a new code of social or moral conduct, which are elementary steps. It is no blind faith, but a to-the-point digest and clear-cut practical science dealing with self-analysis, that is, knowledge of self in man, for the one who observes minutely. All authority is, of course, vested in the practical master saint. When a man is in one crowd, he will talk as the crowd talks. If he joins another crowd, he will talk as it does, and so on. But if he takes his seat on a high mound, he is able to see and hear all, and to judge the actions of man better. A sant is like such a person. He looks down from on high upon the world. He speaks of the state of man struggling for existence, pretending that he knows all, when in reality he knows little. Man does not know how to live, what to do, what to eat, how to act in life, nor why. He has to depend upon his parents and teachers from childhood to youth. For all of his physical troubles, he has to depend upon his doctor. For earning his livelihood, upon his employer. And employers, in turn, need to rely upon their subordinates. For instruction in all mundane affairs, he is dependent upon society. When faced with unforeseen dangers and surrounded by suffering, and when not comforted by anything, he depends upon the words of his minister or priest. And finally, he finds that all he can do is submit to nature and her laws. In vain, he puts his trust in bodily strength and in the stability of the future. At the same time, he makes his own way by heedlessly pushing others down the ladder. Little does he know that he can stand still in a flowing stream, but not in the world of mankind. Sants pity man. They care not for their own personal comfort, and day and night advise man that his life is short, very short. But the worth of holy masters has been underrated ever since wealth and pleasure have been overrated. Repeatedly, sants have warned man that in this Kali Yuga, Iron Age, man has been allotted a limited number of breaths in one lifetime. He has been given roughly 26,000 breaths a day. The amount varies from person to person and is determined by the prarabdha or fate karma. While sitting, he spends 12 a minute. When walking, he spends 18 a minute. And in sexual intercourse, 64. These breaths are his entire legacy and wealth in bodily life. Sants advise man to put this wealth in a secure bank of proper adjustment in order to lengthen life and derive the utmost from it. They emphasize that there is no other way, but man will not listen. Sats further say that man is subjected to the law of evolution in 8,400,000 kinds of embodied creation, and gets one body after the other. And in each body is further enchained with iron fetters of the inexorable law of nature, karma. First, work and act, and then cause and effect. And he must rid himself of this cycle of repeated births and deaths in order to attain peace. With open eyes, man watches living beings, even man, suffering, dying with untold pain and agony. But he smiles away the truth as revealed by Sats, saying, "We know better. We have our own solid science based on facts. We have our inventions, our atomic energy, etc." Thus, the less man thinks, the more he talks. And things not understood are admired. Notwithstanding all this, the Sats continue pushing on with their mission with perseverance and offering experience in the divine science, Paravidya, to those who come to them. The name of the Lord is a very strong tower. The sting of reproach is the truth of it. Self-evident truth requires no proof. The sun can be seen by nothing but his own light. You cannot be lost on a straight road. And that concludes the talk called Sant the Master. And now I turn to another section of the book, The Way of the Saints. And this is a talk given by Master as a presidential address at the World Fellowship of Religions on February 26, 1965. It was published in Sat Sandesh in May 1971. And with Master's permission, I'm going to skip ahead to page 2. All the religions agree that life, light, and love are the three phases of the supreme source of all that exists. These essential attributes of the divinity that is one, though designated differently by the prophets and peoples of the world, are also wrought in the very pattern of every sentient being. It is in this vast ocean of love, light, and life that we live, have our very being, and move about. And yet, strange as it may seem, like the proverbial fish in water, we do not know this truth, and much less practice it in our daily life. And hence the endless fear, helplessness, and misery that we see around us in the world, in spite of all our laudable efforts and sincere strivings to get rid of them. Love is the only touchstone wherewith we can measure our understanding of the twin principles of life and light in us, and how far we have traveled on the path of self-knowledge and God-knowledge. God is love. The soul in man is a spark of that love. And love again is the link between God and man on the one hand, and man and God's creation on the other. It is therefore said, "He that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love." Similarly, Guru Gobind Singh says, "Verily, I say unto thee, that he whose heart is bubbling over with love, he alone shall find God. Love, in a nutshell, is the fulfillment of the law of life and light. All the prophets, all the religions, and all the scriptures hang on to two commandments. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Questioned as to our attitude toward our enemies, Christ said, Love thine enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you. Pray for them that despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father in heaven. Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. With the yardstick of love, the very essence of God's character with us, let us probe our hearts. Is our life an efflorescence of God's love? Are we ready to serve one another with love? Do we keep our hearts open to the healthy influences coming from outside? Are we patient and tolerant toward those who differ from us? Are our minds coextensive with the creation of God and ready to embrace the totality of His being? Do we bleed inwardly at the sight of the downtrodden and the depressed? Do we pray for the sick and suffering humanity? If we do not do any of these things, we are yet far removed from God and from religion, no matter how loud we may be in our talk and pious in our platitudes and pompous in our proclamations. With all our inner craving for peace, we have failed and failed hopelessly to serve the cause of God's peace on earth. Ends and means are interlocked and cannot be separated from each other. We cannot have peace so long as we try to achieve it with warlike means and with the weapons of destruction and extinction. With the germs of hatred in our hearts, racial and color bars rankling within us, thoughts of political domination and economic exploitation surging in our bloodstream, we are working for wrecking the social structure which we have so strenuously built, and not for peace, unless it be peace of the grave, but certainly not for a living peace born of mutual love and respect, trust and concord, that may go to ameliorate mankind and transform this earth into a paradise for which we so fervently pray and preach from pulpits and platforms. And yet, as we proceed, it recedes away into the distant horizon. Where then lies the remedy? Is the disease past all cure? No, it is not so. Life and light of God are still there to help and guide us in the wilderness. We see this wilderness around us because we are bewildered in the heart of our hearts and do not see things in their proper perspective. This vast outer world is nothing but a reflex of our own little world within us. The seeds of discord and disharmony in the soil of our mind bear fruit in and around us, and do so in abundance. We are what we think, and see the world with the smoke-colored glasses that we choose to put on. It is a proof positive of one thing only, that we have so far not known the life and light of God, and much less realized God in man. We are off-center in the game of life. We are playing it at the circumference only, and never have a dip in the deepest waters of life at the center. This is why we constantly find ourselves caught in the vortex of the swirling waters on the surface. The life at the circumference of our being is, in fact, not different from the life at the center of our being. The two are, in fact, not unidentical. Yet, when one is divorced from the other, they look dissimilar. Hence the strange paradox. The physical life, though a manifestation of God, is full of toil and turmoil, storm and stress, dissipation and disruption. In our enthusiasm and zest for outer life on the plane of the senses, we have strayed too far away from our center. Nay, we have altogether lost sight of it. And worst still, have cut the very moorings of our bark. And no wonder, then, we find ourselves tossing helplessly on the sea of life. Rudderless, and without a compass to guide our course, we are unwittingly a prey to chance winds and waters, and cannot see the shoals, the sandbanks, and the submerged rocks with which our way is strewn. In this frightful plight, we are drifting along the onrushing current of life. Where? We know not. This world, after all, is not and cannot be so bad as we take it to be. It is a manifestation of the life principle of the Creator, and is being sustained by His light. His love is at the bottom of all of this. The world, with its various religions, is made for us, and we are to benefit from them. One cannot learn swimming on dry land. All that we have to do is to correctly learn and understand the basic live truths as are embodied in our scriptures, and practice them carefully under the guidance of some theocentric saint. These scriptures came into being by God-inspired prophets, and as such, some God-intoxicated person or a God-man can give us a proper interpretation of them, initiate us into their right import by reconciling the seeming discrepancies in thought, and finally help us inwardly on the God path. Without such a practical guidance, both without and within, we are trapped in the magic spell of forms and minds, and cannot possibly reach at the esoteric truths lying under a mass of verbiage of the bygone ages, and now solidified into fossils with the lapse of time, into institutionalized forms, formulae, and formularies of the ruling class. Every religion has of necessity a threefold aspect. First, the traditional, comprising myths and legends for the lay brethren. Second, the philosophical treatises based on reason to satisfy the hunger of the intellectuals, concerned more with the why and wherefore of things than anything else, with great stress on theory of the subject and emphasis on ethical development, which is so very necessary for spiritual growth. And third, the esoteric part, the central core in every religion, meant for the chosen few, the genuine seekers after truth. This last part deals with the mystic personal experiences of the founders of all religions and other advanced souls. It is this part called mysticism, the core of all religions, that has to be sifted and enshrined in the heart for practice and experience. These inner experiences of all sages and seers from time immemorial are the same, irrespective of the religio-social orders to which they belonged, and deal in the main with the light and life of God, no matter at what level, and the methods and means for achieving direct results are also similar. Religious experience, says Plotinus, lies in finding of the true home by the exile, meaning the pilgrim soul, to whom the kingdom of God is at present just a lost province. Similarly, Henry Bergson, another great philosopher, tells us, the surest way to truth is by perception, by intuition, by reasoning to a certain point, and then taking a mortal leap. These philosophers have said nothing new. They have just repeated in their own way the time-honored ancient truths regarding paravidya, the knowledge of the beyond, the references to which, in terse and succinct form, we find in all the scriptures of the world. For example, in Christian theology we have, learn to die so that you may begin to live. And St. Paul significantly adds, I die daily. And he that findeth his life shall lose it, and he that loseth his life shall find it. The holy prophet of Arabia speaks of mautu kibal ant mautu, that is, death before actual death. Dadu and other saints likewise say, learn to die while living, for in the end, of course, everyone has to die. Thus, we have seen that light and life of God constitute the only common ground at which all religions do meet. And if we could take hold of these saving lifelines, we can become live centers of spirituality, no matter to what religion we owe our allegiance for the fulfillment of our social needs and the development of our moral well-being. God made man, and man in course of time made religions as so many vehicles for his uplift, according to the prevailing conditions of the people. While riding in these vehicles, our prime need is to raise our moral and spiritual stature to such an extent as to come nearer to God. And this, it may be noted, is not merely a possibility, but as sure a mathematical certainty as 2 and 2 make 4. With, of course, proper guidance and help from some adept, well-versed not only in theory, but also in the practice of the science of soul. My time has run out. I'll stop there. I first read from Sant the Master, which was chapter 5 in The Way of the Saints, and then continued reading as much as I could of The Essence of Religion from the May 1971 Sat Sandesh. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, David, for your blissful reading. And there were 84 of us in today's satsang. Thank you all for your patience listening, and thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
In the beginning was the Word was with God, and Word was God. Without Him was nothing made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of man. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not.